My name's Mike Rowe, and this is my job.
I explore the country looking for people who aren't afraid to get dirty.
Welcome. We're going to have fun.
Yeah, right.
Hardworking men and women who earn an honest living.
The idea now is to make sure we found the clog.
Doing the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible for the rest of us.
Now, get ready to get dirty.
Oh. Coming up on Dirty Jobs, how do you tell how many live salmon there are in this California river? You count the dead ones.
You're out here to join us on our carcass survey.
There are a lot of dead fish in here.
One, two, three, four.
It's done to determine how many salmon are spawning.
They're basically dying to feed their young. Talk about the ultimate sacrifice.
And how do you know whether one's been counted? Then, I go to the Dirty Jobs mailbox to answer some of your biting questions about the snake lady.
Ow, ow.
She's screaming in pain. What could it be? Oh, it's just another snake.
And later, this dairy farmer also makes flower pots. They're inexpensive, biodegradable, and made out of processed cow poo.
So even though they're cow pots, they're not poop pots.
It's been changed.
The end product doesn't smell at all, but the product of a cow's end...
Oh, God.
Today I've come to Oroville in Northern California, specifically to the Feather River, for the express purpose of counting salmon. Not just any salmon. No, we'll be counting dead salmon today. Here's one. I don't know how many more are out there, but this one has definitely seen better days. I'll be working with the men and women of the Department of Water Resources. So this is Jason, and this is Ryan, and we've already established that this is a dead salmon. I'm correct, right?
You are correct.
All right, what killed him? Her.
Well, that salmon, that male salmon, died probably after spawning, hopefully. That's a natural cycle for salmon. They come from the ocean, and once they're done spawning, they die.
So, Ryan, the basic reason for my presence here today is what?
You're out here to join us on our carcass survey.
Carcass survey. That's a fancy scientific way of saying we'll be counting the dead rotting salmon that swam up the river to spawn and then die. Why would we do that? So scientists can monitor long-term spawning trends and understand how salmon are affected by the operation of Feather River's Oroville Dam.
There are a lot of dead fish in here.
One, two, three, four.
There's a lot of dead pieces of a lot of dead fish.
Their whole body gets consumed by all the organisms that you see in the river. So they decompose.
Yeah.
And that feeds the stream, which is good for their babies because there's a lot of rich nutrients in the water around when they come out, so they can feed on those.
They're basically dying to feed their young.
Right.
Talk about the ultimate sacrifice.
So this is a salmon red, or a nest, essentially, where the female deposits her eggs. And she will come in and dig a pit, and after she digs it, she'll expel her eggs in that pit, and as she does that, the male will fertilize.
So underneath here, 6, 10 inches, maybe a foot, are salmon eggs.
Absolutely.
And how long will it take those eggs to hatch?
Well, it takes them about 45 to 60 days to hatch. But once they're hatched out of the egg, they actually spend about another 30 days in the gravel. And they have a yolk sac on them. And they actually feed off that yolk sac until they're ready to actually emerge
right
to the surface.
By the time the young emerge from the gravel, their parents have long since died. That's where we come in, counting carcasses. All right, so this is the first carcass. We tally it on the fancy data sheet. And then what do?
We would chop that one.
You would?
Yes.
And again, the purpose of chopping it is so you know it's been counted?
Yes.
And the river's full of them, hundreds of them, thousands.
Yeah. It takes a lot of people, a lot of days to go through them all.
Would you show me the correct chopping method?
Sir.
So we can be sure that this thing gets counted.
So then I would just lift it up like this?
Yeah.
Chop it like that. So you get, yeah, you got it secure.
Is he secure?
There you go.
There's it like this.
Just like that. Excellent.
Oh, I'm going to like this.
It's fun, isn't it? Well,
it's not quite fun yet, but it just became interesting. I like what's happening here. I like the way my day's shaping up. Look at this guy right here.
Yeah.
Is that a, first of all, the male or female right there?
It's a male.
And he's, is he looking for a female?
Probably. He's, looks like he might be battling with that male there. They might be chasing each other around, it looks like.
So these two males are kind of fighting. Is there a female here?
I don't see one. I think we might have three males fighting. There's probably one female up there somewhere getting ready to spawn, and they're probably deciding who's going to get to fertilize those eggs.
They're working it out.
The males, they fight for these females. And so they'll bite each other and scrape each other, and that's likely what those are.
So it's violent.
Yeah, well, you got to earn your woman, I guess.
I suppose. Well, that is the way of things. So we're not just a couple of guys smashing fish to pieces with machetes in the middle of a river.
Well, we're that, but we're a lot more also.
All right, that was 25, I think. 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. Whoops. One more time. There we go, 31.
There we go. And their teeth, you know, you don't think of salmon having teeth like this, but obviously they do.
57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62.
What do we call knocking the bottom out of that thing? How do you tell if it's a boy or a girl?
Number 84.
So let's see.
Yeah, there you
that
see.
Is a male. You can see that's a little bit of his testes hanging out.
Oh, did I? I cut his testes off, did I?
Yeah, you
that's
cut
too. I'm sorry, brother. Who knew your testes were in your belly?
85.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah, those
that
were
was
eggs.
A good one. That was full of eggs.
Yeah.
We estimate about 40 or 50% of our females go unspawned each year.
Oh. So they get this far, but no no final delivery.
Exactly.
Can we have a look at the
sure.
What the eggs look like?
You take your blade?
Sure.
Females can die before spawning for all kinds of reasons. Inadequate water flow, water that's too warm, diseases that result from too many fish in too small an area.
Now, she was ready to go.
Yeah.
She was ready to spawn, but didn't quite make it.
Didn't quite make it. This salmon clearly is dead, and she didn't get a chance to drop off the eggs. Is it a crisis of space, opportunity, or bad luck?
Well, it can be. It certainly can be limited space. If you have too many salmon spawning in one area, you're going to have females like this who just don't spawn. Competition is okay, but at some level, it provides you something like this, where you don't have successful spawning.
It just seems so fragile, you know, the whole system. So many things have to go right for this process to keep going.
Absolutely. You can imagine, you know, a male and a female in a red trying to dig it. I mean, the gravel has to be right, the velocities have to be right.
Temperature's got to be right, current's got to be right.
It is a sensitive process for sure.
Yes, I'm feeling very sensitive today.
Well, you're showing your soft side.
The softer side of Mike.
Oh! 108. The thousands of dead salmon in the river, way too many to count them all. Fortunately, using the magic of statistics, with our count today, we can estimate the total spawning population. Which is good, because my arm is getting really tired. Coming up.
I just to tell you what kind of fisherman I am. I can't even catch a dead fish.
Yeah, it's more dead salmon. But now we're looking for a particular part.
Otoliths.
An ear bone, yeah.
And just like you would look at the rings and a tree that had been cut open, they're going to look at the rings and the otolith.
Then, I sink my teeth into some Dirty Jobs viewer mail to find out the value of a snake bite.
You're not right.
And later.
This is where we turn something from problem to an asset on a farm.
Spinning straw into gold is a fairy tale. But on this farm, turning poo into flower pots and energy is a dirty reality. In addition to estimating the salmon population of Feather River, every week, Jason, Ryan, and their team study a random sample of 25 freshly dead salmon, which they collect from the deeper part of the river.
Officially, this is just a spear?
That's just a spear. We use that to get carcasses off the bottom in the deep water.
Right. And there are carcasses everywhere.
Everywhere.
So this is just the next level of sophistication above crawling around
on the banks.
Like we just were.
Oh. In this group of 25 freshly dead fish, Jason will look for any salmon that have coated wire tags.
It felt solid. I just should tell you what kind of fisherman I am. I can't even catch a dead fish.
This tag is really a little cylinder the size of a pencil eraser that the hatchery inserts into the salmon's head when it's young.
Catching dead fish on the Feather River. Dirty job.
To help the researchers identify the tagged salmon, the hatchery puts a clip in the fish's adipose fin.
Nearly jumped in the boat. Sweet.
Okay.
I think we have our sample.
We have our sample. Heck of a sight there, Jason. And the purpose, again, of this is to,
Purpose is for us to search each section, 25 carcasses, for coated wire tags. So we're looking for salmon that have had their adipose fin removed.
Oh, and I think she's been clipped.
You're right about the clip.
So all the chopping you've done today has prepared you for this moment. You're going to chop this head off just above these fins. Beautiful.
Perfect.
So what they're going to do is they're going to take this back to the lab. They're going to start cutting his head in pieces until they get to that tiny little tag.
Right.
And that tag is about, I don't know, three millimeters long.
The tag in his...
in his head.
And we haven't seen one of those
smaller
yet, have we?
Smaller than pencil head. We haven't seen one yet.
Okay. Just like the lunches my lovely mother used to make me.
The fish that don't have coated wire tags are measured.
She's 76 and a half.
Cut to verify their sex.
It's actually sperm, and it should never come tumbling out of a fish like this.
Scraped for samples of their scales, then tossed back in the river.
So we've basically seen everything that we're going to do to these. We've taken the heads, we've measured, we've checked fins, we've tagged. Oh, but there was another thing.
Yeah, we're going to take otoliths.
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 That's the ear or the jaw?
The ear bone, yes.
To remove the otolith, the ear bone of the salmon, you split the head right down the middle.
You're making progress. Okay, so we've got brain right in here.
That's brain?
Kind of mushy now. It's kind of not much formation left of it. But,
not much, no.
Right underneath, you see that little structure right there? It's kind of in a little sack.
Yes,
right.
It's very
there.
Small. That little guy.
That's it.
That's it?
That's it. Think of it kind of like a tree ring.
Yeah.
Whereas as the salmon ages, there are daily rings laid down on this thing. So if you take it back to the lab and sand it down, you can start looking at those rings.
Just make sure I understood you right. You're going to send it to a lab, and they're going to cut it open. And just like you would look at the rings in a tree that had been cut open, they're going to look at the rings in the otolith and learn things about this fish.
Potentially, yes.
Otoliths are analyzed for trace elements of chemicals and nutrients so that scientists can judge the relative health of salmon populations.
Pulling the otolith from the skull of a recently spawned salmon. Dirty job. Well, I'm still not 100% convinced it's actually a job, but it certainly is dirty, and it is important. And in keeping with the long-standing tradition of cutting dead salmon in half, I've named my weapon. I went with death row, for obvious reasons. Oh. Who's next?
Coming up, one viewer wants to know why anyone would let themselves get bitten by a snake.
Look at him biting you like that. It's crazy.
Well, I tell you what, it's not about the money. And later...
Got a nice warmth to it.
Technically, this device is called a screw press separator. But when it's pressing cow poo, it brings to mind something a little more familiar.
This would be sort of a mechanical butthole.
That's exactly what it is. It's a mechanical butthole.
We got all kinds of mail here on Dirty Jobs. This one arrived. Special delivery. Sorry, Cupcake. It's from Stephanie. She writes, "Hey, Mike, I think I have a guilty conscience. Forgive me, but your distress and my amusement seem to be permanently linked. In particular, that bit with the snakes. Watching you get bit over and over again made me giggle in a way that I can't fully articulate. It also made me wonder, what exactly is a snake bite worth? Well, that's a fine
question, Stephanie. The answer will require a little math and a return to the scene of the crime. This is what you get bit by snakes.
I do.
A snake researcher makes about $30,000 a year. Kristen's very dedicated. She works every week. If she works 52 40-hour weeks, that's 2,080 hours a year.
Ow.
So the snake will have a happy home.
Ow.
Say ow. Look at him biting you like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Divide 2,080 into 30,000, you get $14.42 per hour.
What are you doing? Jeez.
I spent 10 hours with Kristen.
Walking down the beach. Oh, yeah, snake. Grab that, would you? You bet. Yeah. Ow. That hurt. Bit. Yeah.
Which means, as a snake researcher, I would have earned $144.29. But here's the thing. I was bitten 39 times.
Her head goes down.
Ow. Ow.
She's screaming in pain. What could it be?
Oh, it's just another snake. You were like greased lightning in there.
That's right. Gotta be quick.
How many times does 39 go into 144.20? The answer is 3.70. $3.70 per bite.
There you go. It's a nice one.
You're not right.
Kristen, if you'd like me to come back, call me. I had a ball. I'll send you a check.
I don't want to do this anymore.
These are chrysanthemums. They're beautiful, aren't they? And these are cows. They're kind of pretty, too. What do cows and chrysanthemums have in common? Let's find out. You're my shot, dude.
In the rolling hills of western Connecticut, dairy farmers supply the good people of New England with fine milk products. But there's one dairy farm where something very different is going on.
So that's Matt Freund in there. He runs the farm. And I don't know what in the world he's driving there. Matt, that is one poo-encrusted vehicle you have.
And slippery.
And slippery. Well, be careful. Is this a farm you got here or a flower shop? Why am I holding this?
It's both.
Yeah.
My wife has a flower shop and I have a dairy farm.
Tell me about specifically the pot in which the chrysanthemums are growing. It is, after all, why we're here today.
Right. This is a manure-based pot that we've developed over the last 6 years. It's the advantages to this pot. It's nutrient based and it has the ability to grow plants a little better than what industry has out there today. It holds together very well in the greenhouse and it actually doesn't smell, but it's all worked around manure.
You got yourself a pot made out of poo.
Got yourself a pot made out of poo.
As a businessman, you reckon there's a market out there for a poo made pot?
We think there's a huge market out there. We're hoping to get that done this year. Investigate the market, prove the market, move forward on the technology, and go into production.
So you're a farmer, a gardener, an entrepreneur, and I would have to think, based on just a cursory glance at your farm, which is lovely, a very dirty guy.
Most days.
Tell me what I'm going to do today. I mean, what's going to happen to me, and how much am I going to actually learn?
So the start of the pot process is the cow. So the first job you're going to do today is to collect the manure and push it into a methane digester.
First, a primer on proper poo plow propulsion.
Oh, look at that. It's like an amusement park.
It's kind of like driving a Zamboni, but instead of ice, well, you get the picture. This poo plowing is something that Matt does every single day. Now, if you consider that each one of his 250 Holstein dairy cows produces 150 pounds of poo per day, you do the math. Actually, if you multiply the 150 pounds of poo produced per day by the nearly 14 million cows in the country, well, oh no.
This is the nuts and bolts of your operation.
This is where we turn something from a normal problem to an asset on a farm.
This whole apparatus is a cow's stomach, and this is the first stage of entry. And it's bubbling right now. What's happening on a microbial level?
So these little microbes are eating up is like we would at a big meal. They've got all this feed and food, and what they're doing is they're eating and farting.
The bubbles are the farting?
The bubbles are the farting.
Microfarts.
Microfarts, and we can burn those for energy.
What's in the red shack?
So the red shack is where the end of the digester comes. When they're done eating and they've digested enough of that material where it becomes inefficient, then we process that manure to the next stage. And that's where we convert liquids and solids.
What's under the black tent?
So the black tent is the actual digester. We have a 12-foot tarp over top of it that holds the gas in place, and we have a tube in there. We suck that gas out, and we ship it 200 and some odd feet up to our barn where we convert it into energy.
And that's exactly how Matt heats his house and barns, with CalFarts.
Good Lord, Matt. Where'd you buy all this?
This was all homemade on the farm.
This whole notion of microorganisms farting in the poo and creating bubbles in the process, it's a heck of a thing, Matt. I'd like to have a look inside the poo control room, if that's okay.
Let's go.
I'm surprised you didn't paint it brown. To each his own.
To each his own, right.
Coming up.
So the solids are forced out the end. The liquids come out the bottom.
The screw press separator separates solids from liquids in the cow poo.
And we take the liquids and we put them out to our holding lagoon. That's the surprise for later.
And later.
Oh, my God. This is creek.
This is creek.
Oh, well, this is homey. This is dried poo, of course, right?
This is dried poo. This is called a screw press separator. The liquid comes up via pump.
Okay.
Then it comes down into a little junction box here where there's an auger. And the auger turns very slowly. And on the outside of this body here is a slotted screen.
Right.
And that's our problem today. That screen is plugged. So as the auger turns, and the plug here is causing pressure so that the liquid can't get out the screen.
So this is what we want, right?
This is what we want to make pots.
Right.
This is the solids part of what the bugs didn't eat.
Just like that, food and poo have become the same word.
Correct. Food and poo are the same. So when we started the operation, when we were at the raw end of the digester,
right,
there was 16% solids.
I'm sorry, Matt, but when you say something like food and poo are the same, you can't just slip it in there. That is what I call a declaration.
A declaration.
I mean, that's a seminal moment.
So you're going to turn this little button counterclockwise?
Counterclockwise, all right. So the liquid, juicy, fart-producing microbial fodder is now being pumped right into here, and it should be forced out the end.
So the solids are forced out the end. The liquids come out the bottom, and we take the liquids and we put them out to our holding lagoon.
Wait, you didn't say anything about a holding lagoon.
Oh, that's the surprise for later. That's for after lunch.
There's a surprise for later. After lunch. It's got a nice warmth to it.
This is running out. We keep this gauge on here. This runs out at about 103 degrees.
So 103 degrees would be roughly the temperature
of a cow.
So if the goal is to replicate a digestive system and the rumen is outside and all of the liquid that I just shoveled in is being pumped through this pipe and extruded through here, this would be sort of a mechanical butthole.
That's exactly what it is. It's a mechanical butthole. This is actually called cake.
That's cake?
That's cake. In poop terms, that's the cake.
Maybe when Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake, she really meant...
So what we're creating is an environmental solution with no detrimental effects at the end of the road. This is running very slowly. So what I'd like to do is to take it apart, clean the screen. This is normal maintenance that we have to do every month.
This is like a colonoscopy.
It's a colonoscopy. We're cleaning it out. Now, I don't know how interested you are in having some gloves, but we're about ready for the glove portion.
I've seen these before.
Get those two on that side. That's a good spot. That's our good shelf right there. There we go.
Right?
We're going to pull it over, and you're going to let me have it, and I'm going to walk it over here.
You got it?
Yep. We're just going to set that aside.
We're basically looking at a mechanical bowel and a colon.
And a colon, correct. So the auger's inside of here. We still have some plug left, and we have to take this auger out of here first so we can get to the screen.
Okay.
Now you can loosen up this nut, and we're just going to tap this down.
Go ahead.
I hear something coming this way. May not be good.
Sounds like there's just a touch of diarrhea in there.
There is something going on in there. All right, so this is going to come out towards you.
Uh-huh.
And that's just some little bit of urine.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so this baby's loose. Now we're going to work out the screen. And the way to do that is just to grab onto the edge of...
Oh!
That's just not right.
Oh, listen to that gurgling. How far back does this thing go?
We're going to go back 520 centimeters. Something's happening there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like 2 hours after that extra burrito. And you're sitting home thinking, I didn't need to eat two burritos.
All right, Mike, what we're going to do is we're going to try to separate these two pieces because they're just too heavy for you and I to handle.
All right.
Ah, the stench is wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good funk.
It's a good funk.
This is amazingly impacted. All right, so what, we just muscle the whole thing out?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to muscle it out, yep. So we're just going to wiggle it, bring it out, and when it comes to the edge,
yeah,
we're going to be very careful not to pinch our fingers.
All right.
And we're going to keep going straight out.
All right.
Right to the ground.
Okay.
Now.
Oh, yeah, look at the auger end. Oh, I see what's going on.
So what we're going to do is we're going to tip it up towards you.
Yeah.
And we're going to lower that screen down somehow or another.
Oh.
Didn't know he was down there. Sorry about that.
Oh, well, old Barsky took one in the face. That's Dave down there. Camera took a beating, took a bad one, and Dave's sweatshirt, probably not salvageable, but it's all organic.
Coming up. No.
I'm adrift in a sea of crap.
I'm up a certain kind of creek.
You see any fish?
Nothing alive.
At least this time I have my paddle.
Well, you know, the rusty nails are a great touch.
You got a tetanus shot, right?
No. Natural immunity.
There we go. All righty.
Now it's clear. The whole thing is an auger.
The whole thing is an auger.
You know, you explained that before, but it's so much more obvious when you see it.
All right, now what we're going to do is I'm going to tip this down.
Uh-huh.
And
got it.
I'm going to slide. You're going to hold the screen.
Hold
and
this.
You take the screen, I take the auger.
Got it.
And we're going to yank this bad boy out.
Oh, that boy is bad.
Oh, that felt good.
Let me get these big hunks out of the way here.
Oh, yeah. But it's cooked. It should be tasty.
Yeah, it's a treat. Got it.
That looks pretty good. I think we're good to go. Now we have to reassemble. All right, so what we have to do is we have to line up this Teflon strip
right, so
that the wear ring is in the right position for the screen to come all the way back where there's a machine fit.
Gotcha.
And I think we have it. See if all that right. looks good to you.
Well, based on literally 30 seconds of experience, I'm saying we're in good shape.
Let's do it. Let's put it together. Grab your screen and just do it exactly the opposite of what we did when we took it out.
It was this way, right?
Goes the right way. Butt side in. All right.
And just give it a push.
There you go. Slider in. Perfect.
All right.
We're good to go. Now, the heavy piece has to go in next.
Right. And that's going to go this side in.
Correct.
This may be like this.
Right. Now, square it up with the screen. It'll go a lot easier for you. It's a very tight fit. There you go. Keep sliding her in nice and easy. Just keep her squared up. You got it. You got it. You're doing great. Keep her going in. Ah, you hit the wear nuts. Now, there you go. Tip it in. Twirl it. There you go. Keep twirling. Watch your fingers.
Tip it. Twirl it. Watch the wear nuts.
Twirl it and watch the wear nuts.
Don't wear the nuts.
Keep track of all nuts. There you go. Did you feel it slide in the rest of the way?
I feel something.
All right. That was good, wasn't it? I don't want to say what you look like you're doing, but I think you got it done.
I'll take care of the jokes, Matt. Just let me know what I'm doing.
Is this as far as it goes?
That's it.
Well, hell, man, you could have told me that.
I'm going to pick it up together. You're going to walk around the hole, and I'm going to follow you.
Having reassembled the mechanical butt, we will now test its regularity.
You don't mind. I'm just going to slip another glove on, just in case I ever want to have another meal.
Real men don't worry about gloves. They just shove it in.
Yeah, real men don't host shows with dirt and jobs in the title.
We're shoving the poop back in the butt?
Back in the butt so we can keep the liquid from coming out the screen. Now what we're doing with this machine is we're processing 200 cows worth every day.
Now is it time to actually go and make a pot?
Well, we have to clean the pump that feeds the separator because that hasn't been processing correctly either.
Where's the pump that feeds the separator?
So the problem is we're pumping, but we're not pumping efficiently. So what we got to do is we got to pick it up and see if we got a rag muffin in there.
It? What's it?
The pump.
What pump?
It's buried in there. So what I'm going to be willing to do is I'll be willing to pick it up, but I need you to grab it and pull it over the wall.
Why would you be willing to pick it up?
Well, that might be the cleaner job. And you got two gloves. I only got one.
Do whatever you want.
All righty, I'm heading back up.
I'm not really ready.
And so we send the pump back to the murky depths of the poo pit.
Matt, can we make some pots?
One more job. We're going for a ride down the lazy canal.
Oh,
alrighty. So this here's...
That's a nice boat.
This is the love boat. This is where I proposed to my wife.
Oh, that's romantic. Where exactly did you propose? Good God, man.
We have a little maintenance to do, winter maintenance. I'd like to pick out a few sticks before we start pumping so they don't go in the pump.
No. Is this what I think it is?
It sure is.
Oh, my God. This is creek.
This is creek. So what we have is 800,000 gallons of manure twice annually. As we fill it up from the digester, we take the solids and they go out towards the pots. The liquids we need on the home farm to grow our crops to feed the cows.
I'm sorry. It's just taking a second to get my head. I've never seen anything like this. I'm adrift in a sea of crap.
You see any fish?
Nothing alive. I see some flies.
They might not be edible. You're in the deep end of the pool.
Oh.
No diving.
Come here. Ah.
All right, Mike, I can't get this stuff over here.
Well, this is a lucky day for you, Matt, on account of I'm out here in Crap Pond trying to paddle into a headwind.
All right.
Look at you go.
Whoop. Nope. Don't fall in the poo. Well, you know, the rusty nails are a great touch.
Yeah, that helps to get it in your fingers. You got a tetanus shot, right?
No.
Natural immunity.
Yeah.
Coming up, after spending all day getting the liquid out of manure, I finally get to make it into a pot.
So the aerobic poo was in the state it was in because you removed the moisture from it. But now you're adding moisture to it.
And later, so what's the last step in pot making?
Put it on a rack, put it in the oven, and let it dry.
Doesn't even stink a little.
Doesn't even stink a little.
Oh, soul mio, don't know the words. I paddle for hours in ponds of turds.
So get over here where that liquid's coming out. Try not to get underneath it.
Right.
You're going to check those ropes and make sure they're good and tight. Mike, pull yourself along the wall.
Right.
Pull yourself right over.
I'm just going to tie the slack out of it.
Perfect. What that is an insulated blanket.
Right.
That keeps the heat in for the winter. We don't want that blown away.
The nasty-looking board with a bunch of nasty-looking nails sticking out here.
Is that one loose, or is that just hanging in there?
It's...
Just push it underneath there, then.
Oh, no.
Hey, while you're out there, there's a stick right beside you.
Well, happy day.
Kind of wimpy.
It is what it is.
It's a pretty nasty job today. There you go. Walk, keep walking up. That's your belt.
Okay.
All right, okay. Now, your boots are slippery.
Okay, just leave me my dignity. What's left of it?
There you go. We pushed the raw manure in.
Pushed it in.
We cooked it.
Cooked it up good.
We took the solids out of the liquid.
Yeah, we did.
Now we have to compost it.
So, Mike, what we're going to do is we're going to put that fresh fiber from the digester in the back of this machine, in the mouth of the machine.
Yeah.
And as it's turning and getting in position so we can do that, we're finally at that point where we have compost, where we can go make pots.
This is the stuff you're going to use to make a pot.
There you go.
The aerobic version of the poo that came out of the cow that we separated.
Correct.
At what seems like weeks ago.
It's 21 days in the digester, separation today, and 10 days in this in-vessel composter. So we're 31 days before we get to make a pot.
Let's make a pot.
Alrighty. Bring it all the way back.
So I take a tractor load of cow pot ready composted poo to another of Matt's ingenious contraptions, the pulper.
Hang on.
This pulper, it's a washing machine, essentially.
Cake batter mixer, washing machine. It basically stirs everything up, combines it all.
It looked like it was just water that I was dumping?
There's water and a few other ingredients that we have that would be proprietary. So what we've done is we've blended all that together, and now we're going to put it to our recipe tank and make a pot. So first thing I need you to do is reach out over the side here and turn on these two switches.
Okay.
Together. All right.
So the aerobic poo that we just dumped in there was in the state it was in because you removed the moisture from it.
Correct.
But now you're adding moisture to it.
Correct.
Why not just take it when it was moist?
Well, because when it was moist, it smelled like poo.
Yeah.
But when we aerated it, we took the ammonia off. Smelled like dirt. So these pots don't have any odor. Without the composting process, they would smell like poo.
So even though they're cow pots, they're not poo pots.
They've turned to compost.
It's been changed.
Black button.
Right now it's sucking out the stuff. No, leave it where it was. It's drying it out a little bit first. Uh-huh. Now it puts it on to the receiver. Close it on the receiver. Switch those two valves.
Now?
Yep, now. Coming up. Close it off. We made a pop.
That's it?
You did it. So you bring it over, there's your pots. Now you'll notice how soft they are.
Yes.
It's only 30% dry matter. So what we have to do next is to put it on a rack, put it in the oven, and let it dry.
Doesn't even stink a little.
Doesn't even stink a little.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. That's why we go through the whole process.
What do you reckon you can sell this for?
I'm hoping I can sell that for 50 cents.
50 cents? So somebody home could put their petunias in it and then plant the whole thing out in the garden?
Plant it out in the garden and it disappears. And it adds nutrients to your soils. Makes the plant grow bigger, faster, stronger.
You know, don't take this the wrong way. You're too weird to be a genius. Maybe you're just a visionary.
A visionary. I like visionary. Far from genius. A genius would not be spending their life in the poo. But the reason it's a cow pot?
Why?
Is cow gives us everything. She gives us the feedstock. She gives us the energy and the incentive to go forward and do this.
You love the cow, don't you?
Love the cow.
I love the cow, too.
Got to give her credit.
You really do. Here's to the cow. This pot's for you. Well, it comes down to this. Cows love to eat, and cows love to poo. Unfortunately, a lot of their energy is trapped in their poo. Matt's just figured out a way to harness a lot of that energy. Some of it he uses to fertilize his fields. Some of it he uses to make these biodegradable pots. And some of the energy he uses to heat his house in here, where Matt lights cow's farts on fire. What? You want me to beg? You want me to fall on my knees and beg? Fine. Please. If you have a dirty job or know somebody who does, I'm begging you. Go to discovery.com/dirty job. Sometime like, oh, I don't know, now, and tell us all about it. I'd be grateful. In fact, I'd give you a big round of applause.
A little behind-the-scenes action for you right there, or in action if you'd prefer. That's Adam Bradley. As a member of the crew goes, he's indispensable. He stands by literally in an alert posture 24/7, waiting for our every command. He is, as you can see, the picture of readiness. It's because of Adam's dedication and standby attitude that we're able, frankly, to do what we do.